What's going on, man? How you doing this week?
Well, finally we got the construction done on the house, so it's looking good
Yeah, that's been a
finally.
journey. Last 4 or 5 weeks, huh?
Yeah. The bathtub's coming on Monday, the new one, so that'll be the finishing piece. And it's been pretty nice. It's ended up being a much bigger project than we thought it would be, but the end result is really nice. So it's nice to have a nice space, nice living space.
Great.
And
Great.
so yeah,
Well,
that's been the most dominant
I've
thing.
been continuing on my health journey. I started a diet a few weeks ago, and this week I started at the gym, lifted some weights, and I'm happy to say that I can raise my arms about shoulder high today. So
Okay.
it's been pretty brutal. My body apparently is not 20 years old anymore, and I can just bounce back from lifting, but it's been a struggle.
I can understand that, man. I can't do the gym. I've tried several times and I just can't get into the weight, so I like to walk.
Yeah, I do the treadmill on an incline for about 20 minutes, and then I lift, and then I do a little bit more on the treadmill till I can't take it anymore or till it's time to come to work.
I was thinking more like I like to walk in the park,
Oh,
walk
okay.
to a park bench, sit there for 30 minutes,
Yeah.
and walk home and then
Yeah.
pretend like I did something.
Fair enough. That's it. I think that's the move. What am I doing with myself at the gym?
Yeah.
It's awful.
One of my buddies did really good with swimming, though. He swam laps and he ended up shedding a lot.
Yeah.
So.
It's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. I'm Scott Hess, tax and business consultant.
I'm John Barton, small business owner. Remember the tortoise and the hare? Slow and steady wins the race.
We started Turtle Smith to help people start small businesses, providing information and resources to small business owners and entrepreneurs.
Build a solid foundation and forge your dreams.
Well, this week we're talking about our next step in phase two, and it's develop a scaling strategy. And the end goal is to develop your future plans. And this is kind of a fun step. This is where you get to dream a little. In the first few steps, we talked about narrowing your focus, keeping your services and product line relatively small so that you could be an expert on just a couple things. Here it's about dreaming big. Really developing those 1, 2, 5, 10, 15 year strategies, which I think I was the first one to introduce you to the long-term strategy. We got a pretty hefty 15-year plan for Turtle Smith.
That is correct.
So one of the ways that you can kind of look at this, and that I like to look at it whenever I'm thinking of a project, is to think backwards. So we have had a dream for what we wanted Turtle Smith to look like in 15 years. And that was easy to see. We could see exactly all the services that we wanted to offer, and we could see everything that it would, encompass. But unless we just had several hundred million dollars to throw at it, there was no way we were going to just go from nothing to that right away. So we had to kind of work backwards. So I like to think about a scaling strategy of looking way out into the future, seeing that kind of picture of what I want my 10, 15, 20 year plan to be. And then start looking back. What if I'm looking at 15 years, what does year 12 look like? What does year 8 look like? What does year 4 look like? And then it makes it a little bit more manageable because there's a lot of steps in between now and the end goal.
Now, what about people who don't necessarily want to scale? What if they just want to get to a place that's comfortable? Us, for example, right now we're pretty much at capacity. Lulu just went back to China, and she showed me video of the shop and everything. And I used to tell people all the time that we had basically an oversized workshop. But now, actually, we do look more like a factory, even though we're not an assembly line. We're still kind of operating like a workshop, but every square inch of our spot is filled. We can't even hire any more people because we don't have a place to put them.
And that's not a bad point. If you want to make your business just to a point where it's comfortable, you're making a reasonable amount of money, maybe you've hired some people to do most of the work and you're kind of just on easy street and that's your goal, that is a fine goal. Definitely. And so if that's the future plan that you want, that's what you should think about now because all of the actions that you take in the beginning should be in service of that long-term goal. So if your long-term goal is easy street, that is just fine.
Now, do people need to be thinking of building up reserves though. So I know that we don't want to have, you know, just growth for growth's sake, because a lot of people grow too fast. Mm-hmm. And then they, when something catastrophic happens, then suddenly they're laying off half their workforce.
It happens often, especially in the expansion phase. So companies kind of go through, you know, a growth phase at the beginning, and then they'll plateau, and then they'll grow again and plateau and grow again and plateau. And sometimes during that growth phase is where you see layoffs or trimming the fat or trying to, you know, cut things down, because you just expand too fast and then you plateau, and you've thought you were going to keep growing, but you plateau for a little while and you can't afford everybody. So in this scaling step, it's going to be impossible to really predict the entire future, but you just want to kind of come up with your plans. Like what is a good 1 year goal? What is a good 5 year goal? And what is a good 10 year goal? And so pretty simply, the typical 1 year plan for any business is profitability. You're trying to go from nothing to a profitable enterprise. And if you can reach that within 1 year to 18 months, that is a pretty successful business, as most companies take about 18 months to turn a profit. And so in your 1 year plan, you're just growing towards that break-even mark. And then you can look at, well, okay, once we break even, what are we going to do next? So are we going to try to maximize our profit? Are we going to expand? What's the goal? And so a five-year plan, maybe I've maximized my revenue at my current location, and that's where you're at. You have maximized your capabilities of your production. And so now the question is that it? Is that the end of JB Cases? Just maximize profit, continue to make the same number of cases every year at a maximum capacity, or do you want to expand? And we've talked a little bit about expanding your product line, doing ancillary products or things like that. And that's what we call horizontal integration, mm-hmm. is when you start offering similar goods and services to what you
And that's where we would be at right now, is to say, what can we offer that we don't actually make?
Mm-hmm.
So one thing about me, for example, is that I have always wanted to control everything that goes into our product as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that way I didn't have to depend on other people. I tried that also, you know, outsourcing certain parts from different people and things like that. And even working with other factories. And it's just that none of them seem to want to do it to the standards that I want. So it's just always been easier to say, let's control everything that we can. So my big worry, you know, with going out and getting other products to sell, you know, alongside our stuff, is how do I control for quality on that? You know, that's a big concern when we're thinking about scaling and thinking about investing, because these other factories, they also want to have certain minimums. They want to have, you know, they want to know that they're going to be getting enough business from you. And you're also dependent on them for whatever their pricing is. You know, they could change their pricing at any time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I can see where that's a big concern. But it is something that if we want to grow at this point, that's what we have to do, because in our current location, as you mentioned, you know, we're maxed out. I've got a big order, I've got an opportunity to do a big line of cases for one of my clients. But after talking with Lulu about it, I don't see a way to do that without actually establishing a different facility, hiring more people, outfitting that facility, and so on.
Right.
We had thought that we might be able to partner with a factory that we knew of, but it turns out that factory closed a few years ago.
Oh, no. Okay.
So,
well, you bring up an interesting point that we should talk about, and that's the supply chain. That's the other thing that you should kind of become an expert in this stage of scaling. You really need to become an expert in your supply chain. If you're going to scale, you have to make sure that your supply can meet that scaling strategy. And so you really need to narrow down not only on who you're getting your product from, but also who are they getting their stuff from. So if you are getting goods delivered to your house, you know, to sell online, who are you buying from? And then who are they buying those raw materials from? So there's a lot of issues to kind of think about there. Right now, we talked earlier before the podcast about the dock worker strike. you know, a lot of goods are not going to be making it. A lot of raw materials are not going to be coming here. And so businesses are going to struggle to meet the demand for their product if they can't get the goods in, you know, if they can't get the raw materials and supplies. So in this scaling strategy, you should really focus down on your supply chain quite a bit. And the other thing you can take a look at too is what we call vertical integration. So vertical integration is where you take over portions of your supply chain or your distribution network. And so what things could your business as it's doing, you know, if you're buying products or you're, you know, shipping things or moving product, what things could your business take over and bring under your own company?
So, you know, we talked to Tim Cable,
mm-hmm.
And he does vertical integration because he manufactures the products that he sells. He's got now 7 dispensaries.
Mm-hmm.
And also he has brand deals with some of the more nationally known brands where he's actually producing that product in his facilities here and distributing that product to other dispensaries.
And cannabis is one of those businesses, particularly with the 280E law, the awful tax laws that are around cannabis companies. Vertical integration is almost the only way to make money. You have to be able to control your entire supply from seed all the way to the dispensary. And so that's a really good example of vertical integration. A lot of grows that I've worked with here will end up opening their own processing facilities because they have a lot of waste or trim that they can't sell in dispensaries as flower that they need something to do with. And a lot of them that are successful will eventually open their own dispensaries. So it sounds like Tim Cable kind of has that whole market. He's got a whole supply chain for himself.
Yeah. Yeah, he does.
So that's that vertical integration. So any business can look at where they're getting products or where their products are going to be sold and integrate those into their own company.
Yeah, so that's, I see you've got horizontal integration on there as well. Do you want to explain that a little bit?
Yeah, well, we hit about that just a minute ago when we were talking about your business, but horizontal integration is where you just kind of expand your product, services, and offerings. So you are starting to sell ancillary products or similar goods or offering similar services. So my company, for example, started off very small as just doing bookkeeping and taxes. I was eventually able to expand and bring on Tiffany, who's the attorney who works for us. So now we can handle clients who are in tax trouble. And so they'll come to us and she goes and fights the IRS or the state for our clients. So that's a good example of horizontal integration of my business.
Okay, I can see that.
And now I'm also starting to do small business consulting where I actually help with businesses and help them, you know, with all kinds of stuff, licensing or cutting costs, increasing revenue, things of that nature.
So one thing that we do, we also supply interiors, case interiors to other case makers.
Yeah,
that's a relatively small part of our business, but it is an income driver that's fairly mm-hmm. easy because we're producing interiors for ourselves anyway, so we just produce a couple extra for them as needed.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's kind of interesting because I know that, you know, for all of the production of a few other case makers, I've got a small piece of that.
Yeah. Yeah. The last kind of portion of the scaling strategy that we want to talk about is just understanding what an exit is. And you should be thinking about an exit as you're developing your business plan. The few common ones are, you know, an acquisition from a larger company. Typically, especially if you're in like the tech field or even all kinds of industries, if you kind of get big enough, those big fish in the industry might try to buy you up so that they don't have you as a competitor and they can take over your customer base. So that's what an acquisition is, when somebody comes in and buys your company. There's also an IPO, it's an initial public offering. It's also, you probably heard the term going public. And that's when your company moves to the publicly traded stock exchange and you become a public company. So then you have a board and CEO and people who run the company. You will still own a majority of the stock probably, and unless you sell it, but you wouldn't really run your company anymore. It becomes its own entity. And then the last one would just be, you know, selling or passing on the torch. A lot of companies are, you know, generational family companies. They get passed down from, you know, father to son or father to daughter and so on and so forth. And that's a, an option as well. You can build a company, but you could also pass the torch on to a key employee. Maybe you're getting tired of running it and you want one of your managers or key people to take it over.
Yeah, I mean, those are all important things to think about. It's kind of what Lulu and I are starting to think about for JB Cases is what to do with that. You know, we're looking at about another 10-year horizon on that to say.
Yeah, and your company is a little interesting because it's a tough one to come up with an exit for. JB Cases doesn't really work without JB, you know, and without Lulu, who's really the key to running that over there. So it's important when you're developing this scaling strategy or when you're developing your business plan that you have a thought to what would happen. Will the business be able to continue to run, or is it just too wrapped up in you as a person?
And that is a big concern. You know, in my industry, in the billiard industry, we've seen a lot of consolidation. We've seen private equity come in and start buying up brands, mm-hmm. you know, legacy brands, and wrapping them. You know, they are doing a lot of horizontal integration. They'll come in and buy a cue maker. They'll come in and buy a table manufacturer or a cloth brand. But our company at this point, you know, even though on paper, you know, as we've spoken, it's worth, you know, a certain amount. It would be difficult for someone to come in and purchase us and run it unless they were able to put specialized people in place like my wife, you know, or people that would understand my sensibility and continue that.
Yeah, I struggle with the same thing right now. There's no way I could sell my accounting firm because all of my clients are only my clients. They want to work with me. So it's not like I could put somebody else in my seat and have them just run the company. It'd be impossible.
Right.
So when I'm thinking about that as an exit strategy, I have to think that the only way that I could really sell my company or have a company that could have an exit is by expanding. I would have to get much bigger, where we had a lot of clients, a lot of accountants, a lot of lawyers working on tax cases to then be valuable. Right,
so less dependency on you and, mm-hmm. and your particular personality.
Yeah. Rather they, right now people want to work with me, my company, but they want to work with me. I need them to start wanting to work with the company as a whole, which will take a while. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get that because one of the things that attracted me to you mm-hmm. is how approachable you are, how easy you explain things, how much you're able to put my mind at ease. And the accessibility, did I say that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's just amazing to be able to call and you pick up the phone, you call me back right away, and whatever my concern is, you know, you're able to alleviate it pretty quickly. Or if it's something important, you're like, well, get your ass in here and let's get it taken care of.
Yeah, and at some point, if I continue to expand, that's going to turn some of my older clients off. They're not going to want to stay with me anymore because I'm going to become less accessible.
And I see that with my business as well. People mm-hmm. call in, they want to talk to me. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, but selling the product that I make has always been the least favorite part of the whole process for me.
Yeah. I think that's typical for a creator or a manufacturer. The selling part's the worst. My brother makes great wine, but he hates selling it. He cannot do it.
Now the funny thing is when I say that is it's the one-on-one sales that I really don't like.
Yeah.
Even though I've become pretty good at it,
mm-hmm.
but the presentation of my product, you know, to get in front of a camera and say, this is what we do, this is what the competition does and so on. I like that part of it, you know, because I like, it's kind of the show and tell part of it, but just that daily grind of having to get out there and pitch your product to someone, on a one-on-one basis, you know, has just never felt really great, you know. But it is nice when people start to understand what you offer. But it does make you a key person. It makes you somebody that they feel like only you have that knowledge. And so that's one thing in our company that we've tried to do is try to train everyone to have the same amount of knowledge that I have as far as what can be done. To reduce the amount of I don't knows.
Yeah.
Or reduce the amount of knows that shouldn't be knows.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard. You know, it's hard to bring somebody in who's been with you for 2 years and impart 17 years of knowledge into their brain because there's always things that you forget to tell them that are just so intuitive to you, like breathing. And also there's a certain point where, you know, they don't really care about it as much as you do.
Yeah, that's always the hardest part, finding somebody that cares enough. But the training, you know, that harkens back to that training manual. You got to get those standard operating procedures and make sure that somebody can take your place. Well, just to kind of recap what we went through, develop a multi-year plan for your scaling strategy. Fully understand your supply chain, you know, from start to finish, even the raw materials. And if you're using like cotton, pay attention to, you know, where they're growing it and stuff like that. Vertical and horizontal integration, and then, you know, understanding those exits. Any other thoughts on scaling?
No, I mean, I think that, you know, my, one of my few bosses in my life, you know, his name was Scott as well.
It's a good name for a boss.
He told me, he said, you know, when I embarked on the journey of this case company, he said, just, you know, always stay abreast of the technological advances and the materials that are in use, and always look for things that can make your product better and make your knowledge better.
Yeah.
So I would say that would be my advice, is as part of this, as part of scaling and thinking about the future, is where will my company be in the future in relation to the technology that is available? You know, will I be a company that's keeping up with that, or do I not need to keep up with that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think that would be important. That would be my last bit of advice there that he gave to me. So I'll pass it on to you guys.
That's a great piece of advice. And that guy, Scott, sounds like a good boss.
He was pretty funny.
Oh, yeah. This is always annoying to ask, but if you're liking this content, please like and subscribe. It's the best way for us to get more followers and more people engaged in this great business content. You can also follow us on all socials at TurtlesmithOK and find us at turtlesmith.com.
Please like and subscribe.